Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, April 16, 2019, and this is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com, the best soap in the world. Hello, my name is Bob. What's up?
Hello, Bob.
Hi, Rachel. Coming up on today's show, Buzz Burbank from Buzz Burbank News and Comment is here today, BuzzBurbank.com and RealmNetwork.com. We're expecting the Mueller report to drop on Thursday. They say Thursday morning, but naturally it'll be 2 minutes after we wrap our Thursday show, right? Like always. Trump has trouble with water, as he likes to say, water. He has trouble talking about it, lacking enough of it, drinking it. We have all the evidence today. Lots more water problems for Trump. It's not insignificant. It means something. And I have some things to say about Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete. And it probably won't surprise you. Stay tuned. Well, plus, we've got music by Monkey Hole, my favorite band name so far, Monkey Hole, and Emily McCreet. But first, it's time to spend some of your tax refund by shopping through our Amazon link at BobSeska.com. Using our link just beneath my head at the top of every page will take you to the front page of Amazon, where you shop as normal, but because you used our link, we receive a small commission on some of your purchases. And while you're shopping and clicking, don't forget to click our Banded Masculine link, too. Chris Lavoie's Banded Masculine candles are all-natural soy wax candles in steel containers with masculine scents like the all-new Margarita scent, along with Barbershop, Kentucky Bourbon, Humidor, and my favorite, Freshly Cut Grass. Chris is using his bulbous pectorals to create some of the best-smelling candles I've ever whiffed. So when you shop, make sure to click the Banded Masculine link at BobSeska.com, and we get a small commission from every candle you purchase. Thank you for clicking, and now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
You don't understand. I've got proof. They need proof. I've seen it. I've seen it happening. They've got to tell people.
Tell them what?
The ocean's dying. Plankton's dying. It's people. Soylent Green is made out of people.
They're making our food out of people. Next thing, they'll be breeding us like cattle. For food. You gotta tell him. You gotta tell him.
Promise, Tiger. I promise. I'll tell the exchange.
You tell everybody. Listen to me, Hatcher. You gotta tell him. Silent Green is people!
Bob Seska!
I don't know what we're yelling about!
The Bob Seska Show!
All right, it is the Trump crisis day, 817, 567 days into the 2020 presidential election. And sitting right over there is my good friend, Mr. Buzz Burbank. Hi, Buzz.
Buzz.
Wow, that was Charlton Heston before he went crazy.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Hi everybody. Bob, is it? You're Bob Seska?
I think so.
Bob.
You've been served. I'm here to serve you with a subpoena. Don't worry, it's a friendly subpoena.
Oh, sure.
Because nothing says friends like a legal order, right?
I know. That's what they say.
Oh, man. Are you as thirsty as I am? I'm absolutely parched.
Yes, me too.
I could drink like a whole flying water tanker right now. Boeing makes those, don't they, the flying water tankers?
Yes, they do, but terrible at branding.
Oh, yes, they are.
Oh, God. Hello. Yeah, Donald Trump has trouble with water. We're going to be talking about that here in just a second in the context of Notre Dame, which was a horrible, horrible tragedy there. I mean, I hate to, and I'll just preface by saying this. You know, one of the things I really hate to see, Buzz, is when an ancient structure like that starts burning. And we saw some instances like this with ISIS destroying some ancient structures and artifacts and things like that. It's just heartbreaking to see the architecture itself go down and then maybe some of the stuff inside. But I heard on the bright side that they were able to get a lot of the relics and artwork out of Notre Dame before it actually went up in flames.
Firefighters formed a human chain and passed along these relics and artifacts, and a priest assisted them. and I guess supervised and helped and maybe selected some of these items to get them out of there. Much was lost, but much was saved. The facade is still there. They were rebuilding it anyway. They already have $300 million dedicated toward that. And, of course, the donations are pouring in from around the planet, from a world that wants to see that building rebuilt. It's going to take about 10 years.
But
there's some hope out of that, that it will rise from the ashes, which for a terrible thing like this to happen on a very meaningful week for a lot of people, there is that hope that it will rise from the ashes. It's going to take a while, but it was and terrorism was probably one of our first thoughts when we saw it happen. It has been the cathedral's been the target of terror threats before.
Yeah, was that?
Thankfully, it wasn't just a construction accident, and Donald Trump knows all about that, too.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. The guy who doesn't put adequate sprinklers in all of his structures needs to know something about fire hazards. But, I mean, I'm looking at this thing burn, and I'm going, my God, I haven't been there. I haven't been to that place yet,
right.
And now it's
more
or less gone. You know,
same here. Yeah, I feel the same way. I have friends who were there, who traveled there, and of course, this loss was very meaningful to them, as it is, people all over the world. And I understand why. It's just a very important place. And, it's just, like I said, I love these old, beautiful buildings as much as you do.
Oh, yeah. And the gargoyles. I mean, one of the things I've always wanted to do, and I haven't done it yet, and this is like, seize the day, Bob. Why didn't you do it? I've wanted to go to Paris and collect gargoyles. I wanted to go there and photograph every gargoyle I could find, and so many gargoyles are on that building. I think fortunately some of them are stone and still part of the stone portion of the building, I believe.
Yes, they're fine. They should be fine, as fine as they can be. They get wear over time. The Washington Cathedral, the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., has gargoyles. And I can tell you, because I love to share things that I've learned, I can tell you the two functions of a gargoyle. Do you know the two functions of a gargoyle?
You know what? I have no idea. What are the functions of a gargoyle?
One is to ward off evil, and who doesn't want to do that?
Yeah,
and the second thing is it's a drip point for rainwater. It's a point that extends out from the building, and rain can drip off of its nose or its beak or its claws. And not run down the side of the building. Isn't that
fantastic? Brilliant? You know, and whenever I hear something like that, though, whether it's from you or anyone else I know, I start to go to Cliff Clavin a little bit. Like, is this real? Because I had this thing going for the longest time where I would tease
people. You know
they're an army. Exactly right. But I had this thing going, like this ongoing, like person-to-person bit that I used to do, where I used to make up origin stories and history of everyday things. And oh my God, I could go through all of those stories for you, but I won't. The invention of things like waffles and the
I'd
rook,
love to hear that.
Yeah, and like the chess pieces. I've got bullshit origin stories for that too. And you'd be surprised the number of people who, after I've told one of these stories, went, "Oh, really? Oh my God, I didn't know that." I'm like, I'm just screwing with you.
I have to be careful because apparently my voice carries an air of credibility. I think I've caught you off guard a time or two by I'm not even trying. I'm not like putting on an act or trying to fake like I'm smarter than. Although I'm not as smart as I get credit for, I think. I'm not putting on an act. That's just the way I sound. And apparently there is an authority to it, a credibility to it.
Yeah.
And so I can't even, a lot of times, make jokes or get away with sarcasm because people think I'm really serious. and so, it's a dangerous territory for me. I don't have the imagination for it anyway, but for the most part. But it happens.
Well, a lot of people catch me in mid bullshit because what ends up happening is I use the same names over and over again. Like the inventor of everything in my bullshit stories about the origins of things, the inventor of those things always starts out being named Sir Edwin something. And then I make up the last name. So maybe one of these days I'll regale everybody with those stories.
It's a very good start. I like this. Sir Edwin. Sir Edwin invented that.
But speaking of bullshitters, there's these Trump remarks in the wake of Notre Dame and just this guy, this that's this how guy. I'm referring to the president now. This guy. Oh my God. he just does not anything that involves discussing water. He has a real problem with that. But, you know, among other things, he was saying, and this is something that jumped out at me yesterday when he was remarking about it at whatever campaign event he was at while everything was going down. He said he was just rambling on, and he went, renovations? You know, what's that all about?
Yeah, what? Yeah. certainly nothing that's ever been done with a Trump property.
I know, renovations. Yeah. He's so confused by the concept that they were renovating this building.
Whether it's a water, a fire, any of the elements, he knows nothing. He knows nothing about everything and everything about nothing. This guy is everything he knows is wrong. This guy,
I know.
It's just a constant font of this kind of stuff. But apparently, he has this obsession with water.
Yeah, and you know what? Thank God no one listens to him anymore, because, you know, his first tweet, Buzz, was, of course, recommending that perhaps officials in Paris should fly in flying water tankers for some reason to dump thousands of gallons of water onto Notre Dame. What could possibly go wrong in that scenario with just airliners flying over and dumping water onto a burning ancient structure, a structure that's been around since before the Crusades, for God's sake.
There are so many terrifying childlike qualities to this man. And one of them, I mean, that's like something a kid would make up. Flying water tankers. We know what he means, but he made clear he doesn't understand how those work, that they're made to spread water over a wide area, and that the weight of the water would have collapsed the building. So, but thanks for the help, Don. Have a seat. We'll be right with you.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the other thing is just the term itself, flying water tankers. That's definitely not what they're called, are they?
No. Well, that's the Boeing model is. It's called a flying water tanker.
Flying water tanker.
It's part of their rebranding effort.
Yeah. But, you know, every time he brings up water or fire, it's a disaster. I mean, whether it was raking the forests or, you know, I've got a whole library of Trump talking badly about water. Like, you know, we know the one about the hurricane.
One of the wettest we've ever seen from the standpoint of water.
From the water standpoint, Bob.
Yeah, from the standpoint of water, it was so wet.
You're going to look at it in that way.
Thank you for enlightening us with this insight, Mr. President, water is wet. Shocking,
I know. He tries so hard to be smart. That's what it is.
I know.
He's really, really trying to be smart, and he can't.
I just can't,
because he knows nothing about nothing.
Well, yeah, but he knows a little thing or two about how big the ocean is. Big water. It's lots of big water. And Puerto Rico, by the way, Buzz, in case you didn't know, an island in the middle of water.
How's that again?
We've gotten A-pluses on Texas and on Florida. And we will also on Puerto Rico. But the difference is this is an island sitting in the middle of an ocean.
Really?
And it's a big ocean.
Big.
It's a very big ocean.
Big.
And we're doing a really good job.
No, you're not.
He's trying so hard. He's trying so hard to sound smart and in control.
Yeah.
He can't, and he's not, but he's trying to sound that way.
Well, he also has trouble maintaining his own hydration, too, where he desperately needs water most of the time, and sometimes when he gets it, he doesn't know what to do with it. He has to grab it with both hands like he's a hamster eating a kernel of corn and then raise it up to his mouth carefully, but not tipping the bottle, moving his mouth around the bottle top to drink. It's just a whole big confusing mess.
Well, but Putin enjoys seeing that.
Yes, he does. Here's Donald Trump lacking hydration and then desperately needing a long, long pause to drink water.
Japanese companies have announced investments in the United States worth more than $8 billion. 17,000 jobs.
Oh, the cotton mouth.
I know. Yeah, he's got to drink water. That's
okay.
Now he's trying to find his water. This is a major address that he's delivering. Right in the middle. He's got to go for the bottle of water.
How unfortunate.
And the sound of the cameras and
the clock is ticking.
Yes, he's got the bottle. He's trying to figure out where
Japanese manufacturers, Toyota and Mazda, announced that they will be opening a new plant in the United States that will create 4,000 jobs.
Well, thank God he could say United States in that context, too.
He's got the dry mouth.
Yeah. Donald Trump has issues with water. Maybe that's like his weakness. Maybe that's like his kryptonite. He just can't...
Is that not? Is there more to the list, or is
I
that,
know that's it? That's all I have.
I hadn't prepared for this, but I actually have one to add to that.
Oh, thank God!
And I can't believe you've forgotten it from Christmas already.
Oh, really? Shit!
Whose boat is this boat?
That's right. Whose boat is this boat? Right.
Washed ashore by the hurricane. Trump stood among victims and asked whose boat. Hey, this boat had wiped out a house, of a house. It had crashed into a house.
Right.
And Trump's thought is, whose boat is this boat? He wanted to know, can it be salvaged? Is it, because it's on your property, is it your boat now? These were the things, people have, lives have been destroyed, and this is what he was concerned about at the time. And I think that counts as water related.
Yeah, he's so confident that everything that comes out of his mouth is going to be golden, none of it is. Right. And so he's got to go off about, I've seen this boat here, and oh my God, whose boat is this boat? Can we talk about the boat for a while? Because I've got nothing else of substance to say. So I'm going to linger on the boat for a while.
I just thought it was kind of water related. I thought it should be
yes, it is.
On the list.
Yeah. You're exactly right. And you bought me the storybook, the Stephen Colbert, mm-hmm. Whose Boat Is This Boat storybook, right. Which is awesome and terrifying, by the way. And I don't have it sitting here. Otherwise, I would read from it because it is priceless.
Bob,
it is priceless
in a way that also appeals to children.
Yes, that's
terrifying
right.
In a way that appeals to children.
And just the my God, the childish way he communicates these ideas.
Yes.
Flying water tankers, ladies and gentlemen. Flying water tankers, the solution to every burning fire. That and raking. These are his
there you go.
Brilliant solutions.
More raking, more water tankers.
So, you know, we're going to hear a lot more from Donald Trump over the next few days, mainly because the Mueller report is coming Thursday morning. And as I said last week, it's going to be a rainbow of deception with all of these rainbow-colored redactions through the whole thing. And thank God Rocky Mountain Mike is on the job with this.
Yes.
Why are there so many words behind rainbows? And what's on the other side? Rainbow redactions obscuring collusion. Rainbows have plenty to hide.
Who knew?
We've been told we should all just believe it. But I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday unhide it, the rainbow redaction. That Trump is a crook, you'll just see.
All right. Oh, that's lovely. Well done, Rocky Mountain Mike.
Mike, yes, indeed.
Killing it as always. By the way, this is a good chance to remind people today's show is brought to you by Sharpie, the permanent marker that fits even the tiniest hands, whether you're signing a fake illegal presidential order or just looking for a colorful way to redact history's most important documents, always grab them by the Sharpie.
Yes, indeed. Well, God damn it. I am not expecting a whole lot from what happens on Thursday. I'm telling you that not based on any sort of serious analysis of what we can expect. I am just lowering my expectations. That's
good.
What I'm doing.
You probably should. I don't know what to expect. I mean, this could range. As I said, I think in my report last week leading up to this, that on one hand, even a heavily redacted report, as I am hearing, we might see that even a heavily redacted report may have quite a lot of meat available in it. May be, even a heavily redacted report may tell us significant things about the president and his election campaign and more.
Yeah.
So, you know, we could, even the worst could be pretty good is one way of looking at it. Maybe it won't be, you know, if the question is, how many pages of these 400 will be redacted in total? Somebody will do the math on that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't know what to expect. We have reason to be cynical. We have reason from past experience to be skeptical of how much we're going to see. But we just don't know. I'm in a quandary. You know, you were talking about your show being Thursday afternoon, which would theoretically be, even if the Mueller report drops Thursday morning as planned, I don't know how long it's going to take for journalists and others, journalists and attorneys, to pore over what we can see and analyze it and try to figure out the context and try to attach meaning to what we see. In other words, I think it's going to take a while to scour and interpret and analyze what is available in that report.
Yeah.
So even if it came out that morning, I don't know how much you'll be able to say. And if it's heavily, heavily redacted, it'll be very easy for you to handle the show after that. If it's still in the process of being analyzed, it's hard to say. I'm in a quandary about my own show, which is scheduled to drop at about the same time as the report. I mean,
God.
At the time that I'm editing and putting the show together that I've just finished reading into the microphone and preparing to put it up on the internet, in that amount of time, that's when the report will drop. Well, there's no way, even if I delayed my show a little bit, there's no way I could, in my opinion, give that redacted Mueller report the coverage it deserves. No. So I'm trying to decide what to do. I'm looking at either doing a special edition separately, dropping my regular show maybe almost a day early, and then doing a special report on the Mueller report. But then what if it turns out to be nothing? In which case, maybe I can just write and record a new segment for that and insert it into this week's already released show. I really, you know, so I'm trying to figure out how to deal with that because we have waited for this for 2 years.
Yeah.
And now they're going to drop it while I'm releasing my show. So I'm trying to find a way to deal with that and wondering how long it might take to scour and analyze and interpret what we can see.
Well, for what it's worth, I think you should go with the special idea. I think you should do a special. And in fact, wear your like Cronkite horn rim glasses and shirt sleeves and be a little bit disheveled and out of breath. And then you can start reading.
Well, for me, we call that Thursday. I mean, that's what I do. Hey, your show, of course, on Thursday, and I think the listeners need to know this now, you know, when the Thursday threesome is together, that show's going to have to be, because it's dropping on Thursday, has to be heavily redacted.
It really, really does. And and because T-Rex will be here, it'll be a rainbow of redactions. And
always, so always a rainbow with him. Man, really, Rocky Mountain Mike did a great job there. I think we were talking a week maybe before that or so about a rainbow of colors, a rainbow of deception, I think was the name of your show.
Yes, last Tuesday, yeah.
And I was so pleased to see Mike was on the case, and I knew it would be golden, and it is.
He's a genius. But, you know, here's the thing that I'm still curious about with regard to this Mueller report, in addition to the hundreds of other things that I'm curious about.
Yes.
One of the main things I'm curious about is whether or not there's going to be any opinion in the report, where there are going to be recommendations to say that, all of these things amount to what we believe is indictable obstruction of justice. However, we can't indict a sitting president. So ...
Right.
Mark.
Right.
Or is it just going to be a series of TikToks where the Mueller team is just going to say this happened and then this happened and this happened and we had this testimony from this other person and then this happened and this and without any sort of, well, all of this amounts to what we believe is this crime or this impeachable offense. I don't know if that's going to be in there. And I think we're going to be disappointed if we expect that it will be, although there is going to be a lot of horrible things about Donald Trump in there. And the question I have is okay, well, first of all, what do you think, Buzz? Are Mueller's people going to interject their conclusions?
Here's the key.
Okay.
Here's the key. Well, I don't think they deal much. I don't think Mueller or his people deal much in opinions.
Yeah.
They deal in facts. But here's, this is, to me, what's going to be the most telling thing about the release of the Mueller report on Thursday. And that is, will the summaries that were written to top each section of that report, will those, there's supposed to be one-page summaries from the investigators who led that particular part of the Mueller investigation, And they have each already written, as part of that report, a one-page summary to open their section.
Interesting.
And they intended for those one-page summaries to be released to the public in the first place. We should have seen those the minute the report dropped.
Right.
And they could have said, the rest of this is redacted for now, we're going over it, if that was the route they were going to take, which clearly it is. But we should have been seeing these from the start.
Yeah.
These one-page summaries will not be opinion, but they will be full of facts and conclusions and connections. And these are the pages, and the kind of thing you're talking about are the kinds of things that even in a heavily redacted report, even if the pages that follow those summaries are heavily redacted, as long as we see the full summaries, we're going to learn, we stand to learn a lot.
Yes. And this is my next, I think, top shelf question, which is that I was wondering whether or not Donald Trump was going to allow this report to be released at all. Like, if whether he was going to declare executive privilege over the whole thing and just say, just stick it in a drawer and say, no one's ever going to see this and you're going to have to fight me for it.
The strategy we've seen so far is to continue to try to discredit the report. There's a new effort this week to discredit the report in advance of its release and the announcement or the re-announcement that they're going to release a counter report simultaneously questioning the investigators. And so the object there, of course, is to obscure things, to muddy the waters as much as possible and to soften the blow. But I think these strategies tell us that the White House is expecting some embarrassing stuff in the whatever's released of the Mueller report. I don't think they felt they could get away with stopping it. Barr was hired just for this purpose.
But I thought it would have been easier for Trump. Like, Trump would have thought the path of least resistance would have been to just block the whole goddamn thing. And now it appears as if he's taken the first option, which is to let the report come out, hope that all of the really bad stuff is redacted, and to whatever else remains to fight on those topics or to spin his way out of those topics with his usual, you know, shell game or whatever he plays.
And I think that's based on advice, because I think you're right. I think his gut reaction would have been to do exactly that, to squash it.
Yeah.
I think the unanimous opinion of his advisors was, no, whatever you do, don't do that. Don't open that can of worms.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I think he listened, and this strategy of muddying the waters, which they've used all along, now being used again. And again, this tells me that the White House anticipates a damaging report. Maybe there will be something in it after all.
Yeah. And the other side of this, too, that I'm going to be looking at is how badly is Trump compromised by Russia? How much is he working in Russia's favor? Are there conclusions along those lines in the report?
Yes.
We don't even know if it's going to be part of this report. It could be an entirely separate prong of the investigation with its own report to come in the future or its own indictments to come in the future. We just don't know anything. And in fact, Adam Schiff has been on MSNBC quite a few times recently, going, I just don't know. I don't know where the counterintelligence investigation is, because they haven't briefed us about this, but we hope to learn something soon. I mean, are we going to find out about what happened behind closed doors in Helsinki or any of those types of things?
Well, I think when it comes to counterintelligence stuff, when it comes to U.S. intelligence, I think these are the areas that are most likely to be redacted. However, I still think there will be conclusions. Now, I don't think we can anticipate what those conclusions are, you know, what they're going to say, but that's the point of these one-page summaries that top each section, is to present the conclusions of the evidence that is about to follow in the following pages.
And we also, we also need to find out with regard to guys like Don Jr., whether or not he lied in his congressional testimony, and if they didn't find evidence of lying, what their reasoning is along those lines. If they determine that Donald Trump Jr. didn't lie to Congress, didn't lie to Mueller's investigators, I want to see the details surrounding that. And if he did lie, why there hasn't been an indictment. So maybe there'll be some information along those lines. I don't know. It's completely a black box. We're not dealing with any information.
We've been guessing all along, and we're still guessing now. I think if they reached any conclusion on Don Jr. or anybody else, it's going to be based on evidence or public evidence, public things that we have seen publicly.
Yeah.
They will either, like you said, they'll either decide that he did or didn't lie, or, Bob, they may conclude that they couldn't prove it either way, which is always a possible outcome that we have to keep in mind. And when it comes to obstruction of justice, when it comes to that part of the Mueller report, I can't imagine that a lot of it will be redacted. And this also goes to the will we see quotes question. I think if we see quotes, I don't think we'll see many or throughout the report. I think what you'll see are the conclusions. You know, we were told this, or so-and-so told us this. It'll be a summary of what they said as opposed to a direct quote, I would think. If there are direct quotes, and there probably are, they may well be under the redactions. Yeah. But I think the one-page summaries will. But in the obstruction of justice part of the report, much of what Trump, the quotes they probably do use there, are things that Trump said publicly and are therefore not likely to be redacted. And I think public things like that will certainly be open, and that most, for that matter, of the collusion material. I would think that
obstruction.
The obstruction material will be visible.
Yeah.
I think where we're going to see redactions especially are in the area of counterintelligence. You'll see the counterintelligence summary, the one-page summary of it. A lot of the supporting evidence that follows on the immediate pages, I think, will be redacted. That's just a guess. We're just guessing, as we've been doing all along.
Yeah, and it's entirely possible that there'll be no counterintelligence information in this particular report. And like I said, we may have to wait till some point later. I mean, it says here in this New York Times piece about the Mueller report getting released in the first place, it says here the leaders of the House Intelligence Committee asked the Justice Department and the FBI yesterday to share counterintelligence information that investigators uncovered during the inquiry, and for Mr. Mueller to brief their panel. Adam Schiff said, we look forward to the Department and the Bureau's continued cooperation with the committee on this matter of grave national importance. And that seems like it's more of an ongoing matter than it's something that they've drawn conclusions by. But it'll be fascinating, because I really think, Buzz, that what the American people, what many of us following this story have done in the process of following all the news stories and seeing all this information come down, is that we have kind of merged the idea of cooperating with the election attacks with the idea of Trump being compromised and working to benefit Russia over the United States. Like, for example, taking Putin's word over his own intelligence community in Helsinki and other formats. These are all things that I think demand answers, because honest to God, I think that's more damaging. I think the counterintelligence side of this is much more damaging. The collusion, as far as it relates to compromat or compromising information, that's much more damaging to the presidency and the United States than, say, Brad Parscale cooperating with Russia to attack the election or whatever. So
absolutely, and the Intelligence Committee, they're not like us. You know, they have access. They're not like the other kids. They have access to material we are not allowed to see, and for good reason.
Yeah.
They are the Intelligence Committee, and so they have and have generally always had access to U.S. intelligence information when requested, and sometimes provided unsolicited. The Intelligence Committee and the intelligence community have generally worked well together and played well together. There's nothing terribly unusual about them learning these things, but they are sworn to secrecy. So at least for as long as they're investigating it, even these Congress folk cannot share with us what they have learned about various counterintelligence things. I mean, I just think these are things, because we're in a tinderbox here, and people are set off very easily at this point.
Yeah,
and they're ready to be angry at you know. And I've seen some anger directed at Robert Mueller. Even he didn't do nothing, and that was actually their complaint: is why hasn't he spoken up yet? Well, because nobody's asked him to, because that's not his job.
Yeah,
somebody will ask him. We will hear from him. I think Robert Mueller feels that his report speaks for itself, and that if anybody has any questions after they've read it, then he would, I would assume, be happy to answer them. But I think it's too early to, and there's this obsession with eating our own. You know, they're going, we have people who should be our targets of concern who are much more of a threat to our democracy than Robert Mueller is.
That's true.
So I don't. And so, and my point is, and I didn't mean to single that out, and I'm sorry, but it goes to the sort of we're ready to be mad at somebody, and I understand why. We're impatient. We've waited so long for this, and now we hear it's going to be censored, and I'm as frustrated as anybody else is about that.
Oh yeah.
I don't think we should turn on ourselves, and I understand Mueller's a Republican. I'm just saying that we have considered him a good guy, and until we see reason to believe he's not, I'm going to continue to give him the benefit of that doubt, and I just hate to see that sort of, you know, anger. Let's continue to direct our anger at the guy who really is the source of it all.
Yes. And with Mueller, you know, it's okay to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he deserves that. I think the mistake that many of us, including myself, I mean, the mistake that we've all made along this whole process, starting with the day he was appointed, is attributing to Robert Mueller all these superhuman powers that he doesn't really possess, or he may not possess. We may find out that he does possess all of those things, and certainly he's got a reputation that precedes him. But the fact is that, you know, I think sometimes we've superimposed motives and strategy onto Robert Mueller that may not have been the case. Yeah,
all of this has occurred in the dark, and all we could do is guess. And because of the importance of this to our democracy, we kind of had an obligation to guess, to try to figure out what was going on. I think all of us pinned too much hope on the Mueller report. Who knew? But I still have faith in the guy. I know what kind of guy he is. I don't consider him superhuman. I consider him a very square guy.
That's true.
He's not a guy I think I would probably hang with and joke around with. I just don't see that happening. I could be wrong. You know, and I don't think of him as a hero. I just think of him as one of those sort of, you know, he's got one of those minds, almost like a military mind.
Yeah, he's like a machine.
Military trained and very focused and very proud of his country and very patriotic and very dedicated and very successful at what he's done.
Yeah.
So I have a hard time. I mean, he's put mobsters away and we had him investigate Trump, and very shortly we're going to learn what it is, part of what it is he and his team had to say. Until then, if I get a sense that Mueller has somehow screwed us with this report, that this has been a two-year charade on his part, I'll be as pissed as anybody. But you know, let's just wait and see.
He just can't get away with it.
Nope. I know.
He can't keep getting away with it.
Needs to be impeached. I mean, as far as
what we said last week at this time.
Yeah, absolutely. Impeachment is mandatory. We can't repeat that enough. It needs to end here. Trumpism cannot be allowed to continue. And in fact, Pete Buttigieg was talking about that on Rachel Maddow last night. And so we're going to talk about Pete Buttigieg on Rachel here in just a second. And I want to mention actually something, and everyone's going to go, "Oh, Bob, come on." I want to say something nice about Bernie Sanders here coming up here in a second too. Wow. And I know, don't stop listening. Don't turn off the podcast yet until you hear what Buzz and I have to say about Bernie Sanders.
I will join
Sanders.
You for that.
Okay, sounds good. In the meantime, let's talk about our Patreon page. All right, on tomorrow's interview show, I'm going to be chatting with the great Andrea Chalupa. She's a film producer and the co-host of the Gaslit Nation podcast. Perhaps you've heard of it. Co-hosted also by Sarah Kendzior. Andrea used to be my editor when I wrote for AOL's Wallet Pop site.
Cool.
Like 10 years ago. I can't believe it was 10 years ago. Where the hell is the time gone? But you'll find this interview and so much more at our Patreon page. Also, our Patreon page is the best place to chat with me one-on-one in the comments and in the community tab where you can post your own blogs. So if you want access to me, and I don't know why you would, but if you do, the best place to do that is on our Patreon page. So please help support this completely independent podcast for $1 a month or $5 a month or $10 a month or even $15 per month. And depending on your subscription amount, we'll give you hours of weekly bonus content, including our post-mortem show, which is recorded right after the end credits roll in our Tuesday and Thursday shows, along with our Friday After Party podcast and the 90-minute ultimate edition of this show without commercials. We're also posting all kinds of free content on our Patreon page, including our Wednesday interview interview show with people like Eric Bollert. That was last week. Randy Rhodes, Malcolm Nance, John Fugelsang, Frank Conniff, Jillian Barbary, and the great Steven Weber. That's BobSeskaShow.com. Again, BobSeskaShow.com, or just click the all caps Patreon link beneath the logo, beneath my bulbous head at BobSeska.com. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show. Let me tell you how it begins.
This is Monkey Hole. Monkey Hole. I love it. Want to buy a monkey? This song is from an unusual project by Peter McDade, who wrote a book called The Weight of Sound. And then he went in and he created a soundtrack for his book with a bunch of fictitious bands, basically mostly him and then his musician friends playing along. And one of the fictitious bands is Monkey Hole. This is actually Peter singing and playing on this one. It's a song called Pay Me Now. We're going to link to the entire project on Bandcamp. They have a Bandcamp page. And we'll have that in the description below this episode. Thank you for supporting all of our independent bands. Make sure to submit your music to bobseska.com/music. Of course, it's not spelled that way. It's the traditional spelling of music. I don't know why I said it that way.
DJ. That's the DJ pronunciation.
Music. Borb music.
We hereby demand that you do that.
Why do DJs, Buzz? Why do we switch the M's and the B's? Why do we do that? Why do we say music with the you have integrity.
In the exaggerated attempt to affect their voices, and sometimes it's because they're just they're trying to sound bigger, like Trump. or they're you know trying to create a sort of character, and I use that term loosely. They will go to that sort of pronunciation, or they used to anyway. I think we're well past those days.
I think so. As sad as that is, I'm trying to bring that back with the Indie Music Countdown a little bit, or doing my version of it. I will never go full belcher on the show.
Oh yeah, there's nothing wrong with being a jive DJ. Yeah. I think it's just you don't need to do the thing with your voice.
Yeah, I know. I don't need to say music with a B in the beginning, except for in addition to an M. That's just dumb.
only if you're making fun.
That's right. Exactly right. All right. So moving along here. So let's see. Pete Buttigieg was on Rachel Maddow last night. And this is, in fact, Buzz, the first time I've ever really sat and listened to him talking. And I have to say, very, very, very impressive.
Indeed. Yeah, I saw it too.
Jed Bartlett, impressive. And that, I don't say that a whole lot. Of course, my template for who I tend to support, not only in terms of presidential candidates, but politicians, leadership, all across the board, is any variation of Jed Bartlett and Barack Obama. Somehow a chimera of those two.
You know, you could just go straight to the source and campaign for Aaron Sorkin.
I was thinking about that. You know, one of the first blogs I ever wrote at Bob Seska, when I first started BobSeska.com as my own blog back in right after the 2004 election, one of the first blogs I wrote was Martin Sheen for president. I was like, you know what? We really have to do this. We have to get Martin Sheen. And you know what? 4 years later, we had African-American Martin Sheen as president. Yes, that's what happened. Yeah. And now Mayor Pete is here. Yeah. I mean, I got to tell you, I mean, the first observation right out of the chute as far as Pete Buttigieg goes is I feel safe and confident that this guy is not going to be an endless stream of gaffes and stupid moves. I have confidence that his campaign, and I'm not endorsing him. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I'm backing Buttigieg yet. I'm not backing anyone yet.
It's early. It's way early.
He was saying it's only April. He said on Rachel last night, it's only April. And I said, you know what? Next April, it's going to be only April. You know, I mean, we have that long to go before we actually hit the real meat and potatoes of this election season. But this guy, so impressive, not only in terms of him being able to articulate his vision, but the strategy itself is so sound, at least in the way he describes it, where he's starting out talking about American values. Taking a tip from the Republicans, who always start out their political campaigns, who always start out their debates and their arguments by talking about American values. And then after that comes how you apply the issues into the framework of those values.
And you know, let me just interject here. Populism was originally a Democratic thing. And in recent decades, it's become a Republican thing. There is a difference between Republican populism and Democratic populism.
Yes.
Buttigieg here, like a few other Democratic hopefuls, and there are several who are doing this, are taking a populist route in their campaigns. I have, and I was equally impressed with Buttigieg. I mean, I thought he killed it last night at the age of 37. And I do like the idea of a younger guy. And if you're going to go with a younger guy, this seems like a smart one. But again, not an endorsement, way too early. He could stumble along the way. Any number of these folks could stumble along the way. It happens. So don't get too married to anybody at this point.
Right.
My advice. But we had a real treat last night, a double treat of an hour each, basically, of two Democratic hopefuls. And it was interesting to watch. And I sat and watched this for 2 hours, which I can't believe, because it is only April, as you've said. And because I'm the one who was saying it's way, way too early to talk about this stuff. Well, what I found out is we don't have any choice. It's upon us, whether we want it to be or not. And so... I was curious about both of these candidates at this moment in time, and so I dived in. But it was a real treat if you wanted to hear, spend an hour with a couple of the many, many Democratic hopefuls.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things, if you were to listen carefully enough to Pete Buttigieg talking to Rachel last night, and certainly Pete Buttigieg talking to anybody right now, whether it's on the stump or whether he's doing an interview, he's so clever about his language. And one of the things that it didn't amaze me, but it certainly impressed me, is the way he was able to, in one smooth motion, not just to talk about American values and how the rest of the world observes American values, but to also say that Donald Trump is out of step with those American values, that Donald Trump is contrary to all of those values, that we, because of his lack of projecting American values overseas, he is putting America in a place where we lack credibility when we talk about things like freedom and freedom of the press and all of these things that we cherish in the United States.
He's talking about value. These are Republican issues. These are Republican platforms. He's talking about values. He's talking about being a Christian, about being religious. He's stealing stuff from the Republicans and using it against them. And this is very, very clever. The one criticism I have heard of him, and again, very impressed, but a criticism I've heard is he was lacking in detail. He had inspiring sentences, but not necessarily any plans, per se. Now, again, it's early. Give him time. I'm just saying, you know, already people are finding little flaws, but he was terribly inspiring. I was very impressed in each of these hours last night.
Well, what he's doing, and I think one of the reasons why people are frustrated with lack of specifics is because right now he's not talking about specifics. He's talking about broader concepts.
Right.
So, you know, like I said, like he's talking about the values.
And if,
And if you're looking to, well, how is he going to pass Medicare for All or something like that? Well, you know what? There's answers for that too. And one of the times last night I stood up and cheered was when he was talking about starting with a Medicare for All option to be included with the Affordable Care Act on the exchanges. And what he's talking about there is, of course, one of my big things of the last 10 years, which has been the public option. Like I've always, I fought like hell for the public option and the Affordable Care Act when that debate was going on in 2009. I said you can't have an individual mandate without a public option, because if you're mandated to buy something, the best you can do in that scenario is to buy a public insurance option that is a nonprofit situation. So you're not being forced to buy into a profit industry.
This is clever on his part, because on one hand you have people in his party a little farther to the left who are saying Medicare for All, period. And then you have Nancy Pelosi, who's very smart, very powerful, very influential, saying, yeah, we don't want to build it from the ground up. Let's just fix Obamacare. Well, here comes Pete Buttigieg saying, hey, here's what we do. Yeah. We keep Obamacare, and we make the Medicare option part of that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that decides very, because then you don't have to build from the ground up and invoke the kind of radical changes that would again be required if we were to just flip a switch and go to Medicare for all.
Yeah, but obviously this is the best way and the most expedient way to get to Medicare for all, where you have an established infrastructure on which to tack a public health insurance option.
Right.
And then you can expand it from there. And then the expansion can begin almost on day one, practically, after passing it. So that I thought that was a good idea. I'm curious as to how Donald Trump is going to attack Pete Buttigieg. I think he's going to, certainly it's going to be like
Pink, give you a hint.
Pink Army.
Jimmy Fallon, I think, gave us a hint last night.
Oh, yeah. What did Fallon do?
Yeah, see, I'm not a Fallon fan.
Neither am I.
He dressed up, not at all, like he's at the bottom as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, me too.
He dressed up like Pete Buttigieg and said, "It has been my dream to be president since I was 14 years old. And now here it is 2 years later."
Yeah, that's going to, I think that's going to be a
there's,
thing. Maybe.
That's, and I, that yeah. sounds like an approach that Trump would take.
Little boy, the little boy approach. Mm-hmm. Okay, little boy, whatever you say.
Little Pete, yeah.
Yeah. I also think that the Republicans and certainly and especially the Trumpers are just going to latch on to the gay thing. I think they're going to make a big deal out of the fact that Pete Buttigieg is gay and in a gay marriage. And I think one of the things they're going to do is conflate that with his public service plan, where he's talking about creating a system whereby Americans can put in a year of public service and then use that to pay for college and so on. Mm-hmm. And it's a fantastic plan. But I think what Donald Trump is going to do is he's going to say, "Oh, this is a backdoor. It's a backdoor draft," is what it is. And then what they're going to do is they're going to. You see, you said that. I did not say that, commenters.
I heard you say that.
Maybe we should do this. Oh, there we go. That makes it.
It makes it all better. Isn't that nice?
Okay. Well, what he's going to do is he's going to say, "Do you really want to be forced to serve in Pete Buttigieg's Pink Army?" I swear.
Yeah,
to
especially
God,
from a draft dodging president. I would expect that answer for sure. Yeah. And I expect somewhere on the far right. It's easy to sort of figure out how they think now. This is Pete assembling his gay army.
That's exactly right.
So you can imagine. And listen, that's the kind of thing they're going to do. That's the kind of thing they're going to run with. Indeed. Yeah.
Well, before we take one last break, let's talk about Bernie Sanders here for a second. You know what?
This is big.
Yeah.
You have to, Bob. And I know a lot of people don't want to, but we have to. And I'll tell you why now. He is the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. He is number one in the polls. It's way early. I know that. He's easily number one in fundraising. So far as America is concerned, regardless of what you think or I think or the people listening to us think, as far as America is concerned, by the numbers, Bernie's the guy.
Yeah.
Bernie could be the Democrat. And there's so much to consider about that. This thing about, but there's so much, and he performed so well last night. I mean, he looked right into the lens at Fox News and really shut him down, really did a great an incredible job of countering Fox News. He went into basically enemy territory as far as the Fox viewership is concerned. The room was friendly, but the viewership maybe not so much. Fox, of course, benefited from the ratings. They got not only their regular Fox viewers, but a lot of Bernie supporters and a lot of other voters who were curious about this town hall. People haven't been watching town halls on CNN. I expect they did watch this one on Fox.
No.
This was a very brave thing for him to do, and he's being admired. He's been criticized a little bit for it, but he pierced the bubble. He pierced the Fox bubble, and he got inside there. What if you could have an hour on Fox News to say, within reason, anything you wanted?
Yeah.
That's what Bernie had. That's what Bernie did. Mm. And he discredited a lot of their work. He discredited Trump. But he did it in a way, it wasn't about the Mueller report, it wasn't about corruption other than maybe Trump's hidden taxes. it was about the issues. It was about wages and health care and the kind of stuff actual people actually care about.
Yeah.
So it was an amazing performance on his part. Now, you may not like Bernie. I have my own concerns. The Russians, whether his campaign knew about it or not, and that isn't clear, but the Russians helped his campaign in 2016 to try to hurt Hillary and to make her more vulnerable for Trump.
Yep.
There's evidence they're doing it again now. The Russians still know the fierce enthusiasm, as I call it, of Bernie supporters.
Yeah.
I don't think Bernie should be criticized for being a millionaire, even though he's railed against millionaires, because he's saying millionaires and billionaires ought to pay more taxes. So clearly he's including himself in that. So I don't understand why he's being criticized for revealing now that he's a millionaire. I don't see what the harm there is, but then there's this Russia thing, you don't know what to think about that. And then there's the fact that he's number one, he's in the lead. If he were to become the Democratic nominee, we got to support the guy, even with some of these asterisks. So I'm saying, we cannot talk about Bernie, but he's huge, and the numbers are huge, and we're going to have to reckon with that one way or another. And he could still be used by Russia to divide the Democratic vote again. As good as, because I agree with, I thought his answers last night were great. I agree. I think he said in my book pretty much all the right things last night.
Yeah.
I'm just concerned about some of these other things and how he is a tool of Russia, whether he wants to be or not.
Yep. And that's a gigantic concern that I have. But I mean, mainly, yeah. And everyone knows, look, I shouldn't have to sit here every time Bernie Sanders comes up, every time we mention Senator Sandwiches.
No.
I don't want to sit here and have to preface by saying, yeah, everyone knows how I feel about Bernie Sanders.
I think we can move past that.
Yeah. He's the one Democrat in the field who I've got a big, and he's not even legitimately a Democrat, but he's the one candidate in the field that I have gigantic question marks about, and certainly I have my criticisms of what he did in 2016. All of that being said, and again, if you take issue with this from an anti-Bernie point of view, if you're against Bernie Sanders and you come at me about this in the comments, I will tell you, I am going to challenge you on this in the comments, because usually I try to stay out of those kind of shovel fights, especially this early on Bernie Sanders. But the fact is that if you challenge me on that, you have just not been paying attention. You have not been paying attention to everything I've said about Bernie Sanders. So all of that being said, I thought it was a fantastic idea for Bernie Sanders to go on Fox News Channel. Again, I shouldn't have to sit here and say all of the things that I've always said about Fox News Channel.
Right,
it's a propaganda network. It's an entertainment channel. It's all bullshit.
Right.
And that is all a given. We know what Fox News is all about. The fact of the matter is that there are millions of people who watch that network. And those are millions of people, many of whom can be poached. If they are talked to, if you break through the bubble and you deliver the Democratic message in a way that is accessible to them. And I think, you know what goes a long way with Trump supporters and Republicans in general is a bravery and boldness and owning yourself, owning your message.
Two sides to that coin, but
Yeah, but I mean, the process of owning who you are and what your message is should also include owning it on Fox News Channel to me.
Yes,
because if you have the the courage of your convictions, then you go on Fox News Channel and relate those things to people who haven't heard them yet. These are people who are living in this hermetically sealed bubble. They are shrink wrapped to all hell. They don't know which end is up. And Bernie Sanders goes in there and starts talking about meat and potato issues, paying for health care, paying for college, taxing the wealthiest Americans. These are all things that I think most Americans can kind of get behind. And if that helps the overall Democratic scenario and not just Bernie Sanders, that's fantastic. Again, this is an audience that's waiting to be tapped, and we can't be afraid to go in and talk to them. Everyone knows that I've had this ongoing thing with, I don't mind listening to what the crazy people have to say, too, because I think ignoring them doesn't make them go away. Likewise, blocking them out, not communicating with them too. That won't make them go away either. The Democrats refusing to go on Fox News Channel will not make Fox News Channel go away. It'll not make Fox News right. Channel become more legitimate or more honest about their reporting.
Many of those people, many of those Fox viewers voted for Trump because Bernie wasn't in the end available. Right. Many of them were going to vote for Bernie. He wasn't available, so they voted for Trump. And this leads me to the what I think is the real elephant in the room, because there's another eerie similarity between Trump supporters and Sanders supporters. Even though I liked everything Bernie Sanders had to say last night, I'm still troubled by many of his supporters who seem who seem angry in much the same way Trump voters are angry. They are fiercely enthusiastic in much the way Trump voters are fiercely enthusiastic. I worry and there's the potential that you know he's getting that he could again get help of some kind from Russia if for no other reason than to divide the Democratic Party.
Could be happening now already.
It as I understand it, it is. There is evidence that it's already underway. You know, it's very concerning that these similarities between many of the vehement Sanders followers and Trump followers, to me, they're frighteningly similar. And do we want that again, in spite of the good things that Bernie has to say? There are, again, it's early. There are a lot of candidates out there. I am exceedingly disappointed that the women are not getting the coverage they deserve. Kamala Harris was way up there, and I think she was in the top three at some point. And they're just not, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's their campaigns or whatever, but it's all about the boys and the B-boys at that. You got your Biden and your Bernie and your Beto and your Buttigieg, and they're all boys, and that's what we're hearing about so far. And that's and some of them are, listen, in my opinion right now, I think, again, I'll say this again, we are blessed to have such a wide field of candidates. Many will drop off along the way, but we are blessed to have this kind of choice of truly inspiring people running for this job, in my opinion. So be patient. Don't marry yourself to a candidate. Don't rule a candidate out. Don't rule a candidate in. Continue to sit back and watch the show. And unbelievably this early, it's already gotten interesting.
Enjoy the idea that just about every Democrat, and I underscore just about, there are a couple that I don't really like all that much, but I think just about every Democrat could be president right now, especially compared to Donald Trump. I mean,
a turnip could be president right now.
That is true in relation to Donald Trump. But, you know, the fact is that I know, as soon as I post this show, I just have to get up and run out the door.
I'm sorry.
Because, well, no, don't apologize for God's sake.
When a candidate is this popular, as he is, and when he has the sort of backing that he's getting, we just need to keep our eye on that. That's all I'm saying. I ain't saying nothing. I'm just saying, you know, let's keep our eye on that as we do all the other candidates.
That's right.
Just wait and see how this settles out and not reach any dramatic conclusions this early in the game. And I see people making dramatic conclusions about Bernie one way or the other. I see people making dramatic conclusions about other candidates. Well, that's swell that you like them. I'm really proud. I'm pleased for you. I'm happy for the two of you. But let's see how the horses run.
That's right. And there'll be people making dramatic judgments on us after this, I think.
I'm sorry. Not my intention to offend anybody. Just my views. We're just talking here.
Yeah.
I've tried to give, and I had trouble with this morning with somebody online. I'm trying to give Bernie a lot of credit here because his ideas were great. He's clearly successful. They're clearly well received. Mm-hmm. And if he's the nominee, I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah.
End of story. I'm just saying we were not attentive enough with the election of Donald Trump. Let's not be that inattentive with someone else.
And let's not be in this place where every time either Buzz or I say something nice about Bernie that we've got to preface it and postscript it with all of these qualifiers. You know,
Well, I know. It's all I'm saying. We almost have to because it's a minefield out
there.
It
is. It very much is.
And I don't want to lose our friends in that faction of the progressive movement. I don't want that. I want us to be friends and brothers and work together to the extent that we can. Another criticism of Bernie is that he hadn't done enough to help reunite his folks with the other Democrats and people. We need all of those votes to win, not just some of them. Everybody has to show up at the polls.
I will leave you with this, that Bernie Sanders released his tax returns yesterday.
Yes.
10 years worth of tax returns. And on one of the returns, he understated his Senate salary, which is, I think, $147,000. He stated it as $133,000.
That bastard.
Damn him.
Hang him. Knew it all along, Bob. Listen, I that's out of 10 years of returns, that's the big lie.
I
hardly think that, especially considering the dough he has now, he'll be happy to pay that plus penalty and interest. Shut up.
Yeah. My ongoing question is why? Why did he wait so long? All right. One last commercial break. We'll wrap up the show right after these words. All right.
Ouch, my ass hurts.
What?
I said my ass hurts.
Huh?
Aw, geez, someone thought I was a chocolate bunny and took a huge bite out of my ass. And it hurts!
I can barely hear ya. Someone took a bite out of my ears.
Man, I know we look like chocolate, we smell like chocolate, but people can't eat us. We're soap!
Want to fill your Easter basket with fabulous treats that aren't loaded with sugar? Check out all the Easter soap goodies from Bubble Genius, like our Here Comes Peter Chocolate Tail Soap, also available in pre-chumped My Ass Hurts gift baskets.
What did she just say?
Vegan and bunny friendly bath and body from BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska!
The way the mountains look in the sunset after a storm, they look just like torn paper stuck to watercolor puddles, and it doesn't really serve you right to think about it too much. We've done our share to tear the paper, or Mother Nature's lost her touch. And I wonder how it feels to know you're doing everything. You don't have a heart. Don't take too much to start a war, you know.
All right, this is Emily McCreet. You Don't Have a Heart from her Again EP. I hope you watch. Emily wrote this track right after Trump was elected. And so if you listen carefully to the lyrics, you can kind of tell. It's a great album. Link in the description below.
I love her sound. And this is the kind of song, if this came on in the car, like on a CD or something, I would roll up the windows, back it up, and turn it up.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I love this. So many great songs. You know what? So many of these artists, I have trouble picking which songs I'm going to play because there's so many good songs. I think I've got maybe half a dozen Emily McCreet songs lined up and ready to roll for the show. And this is obviously the first one. Again, the album is Again. That's the name of the album. You can get it on iTunes and every place great music is found, great indie music.
Awesome.
Okay, so it looks like Roussel, after the Trump administration lifted sanctions with the help of Mitch McConnell in the Senate, Roussel is now going to spend $200 million in Mitch McConnell's home state of Kentucky.
Good job, well done.
Why did I almost say Mentucky? I guess it is man territory, Mentucky. But yeah, this is something that we could have seen coming from a mile away, especially knowing how Mitch McConnell has been slow walking and dragging his feet on Russia, especially because we know that Mitch McConnell received millions and millions of dollars to his campaign PACs through guys like Len Blavatnik, and how, you know, it's very clear that when we're talking about things like the Mueller report, we're talking about things like protecting Robert Mueller and making sure he won't get fired. Mitch McConnell has dragged his little turtle feet the whole goddamn time.
Right. Well, it's a moot point now, but the corruption is so vivid, so vividly clear. The U.S. has not seen this level of corruption in the federal government since the 1920s.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is Oleg Deripaska.
Old friend.
God damn. Oleg. Right, right. Oh, and reach for comment. This is what Mitch McConnell had to say. Yeah. Oh, no. Not the tape of him having sex. Didn't he say something verbally? All right.
Not just having sex, Bob. It was that moment.
The plant, which startup Brady Industries plans to open next year in Ashland, Kentucky, is the largest project being pursued in the domestic aluminum industry under the Trump administration's 10% duty on imports of the metal imposed, or aluminum specifically imposed a year ago. It would also draw more imports into the U.S. because the mill would roll aluminum slabs from abroad into thin sheets for the auto industry. Well, good for them. But this doesn't preclude the fact that this is Russia. This is Russia aluminum. This is Oleg Deripaska's aluminum. Yes. And
he's the aluminum king.
Aluminum,
I believe
king.
They call him in Russia. Yeah.
Yeah. So this continues to just stare us in the face and dare us to ask questions in terms of where all this money is coming from and why.
And I don't know where or when or how, but the truth, as it did in the 1920s, will come out, we'll get to the bottom of this. But it's deep and wide. It really is widespread. It really is the most pervasive corruption we've seen since the 20s.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about that. And, of course, it's not just Donald Trump. It's not just the Trump administration.
No.
It's the entire Republican Party right now is owned by the Russians. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's another burning question that we need answers to, which is,
yes,
how deeply has Russia sunk its talons into the Republican Party? And we have some hints along the lines of the NRA and some of this Russian money, Len Blavatnik and others contributing to Russia. I almost mixed up Republican and Russian. I almost mixed those two words.
You're not the first.
Shocking, isn't it? But I mean, the question remains, will we discover what these links are? And I was really hoping they would come from Robert Mueller and not the House Democrats, because coming from Robert Mueller would carry a lot more weight and have a lot more credibility, I think, than something that might be targeted as partisan.
I hope so, Bob, because I've been reading this book for a very long time and my eyes are tired.
Yes, my eyes are stingy and burning, and that's not because I've got bees in them. It's because I'm tired and he keeps getting away with it. That's why. All right, well, we're going to talk more cruel whimsy coming out of the Trump administration that's coming up next on the Postmortem Show. Yeah, lots of cruel whimsy regarding ICE and regarding Trump surveilling disabled people on social media. But her emails, you know, she had emails.
Butter.
All right. That and a whole lot more. Candace Owens is an idiot. We may talk about that, too. That's all coming up on our Postmortem Show. Again, that happens and gets recorded right after this music is done playing. And then we take all of that audio and we stick it on our Patreon page, BobSeskaShow.com. And if you sign up for $5 a month, you can listen to our dual Postmortem Shows, one on Tuesday, one on Thursday. And while you're there, you can also subscribe to our Ultimate Edition of the show. And for the $15 per month fee that you would pay, you get a commercial-free version of the free show that also has the Postmortem Show tacked onto the end of it. Plus, you get the Friday After Party with me and Kimberly Johnson. Lots of fun stuff we're talking about every Friday on the show. And you want to join that exclusive club because it's all of the shit that you didn't get throughout the whole rest of the week of shows. Plus, a lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll are there, too. That's on our Patreon page, BobSeskaShow.com. Meanwhile, you can hear Buzz Burbank News and Comment at BuzzBurbank.com, also RealmNetwork.com, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. You're on Spotify, right?
Yes, I'm everywhere. Okay. And I may be early this week, so watch for me on Wednesday.
Sounds great. We'll see you over there. Bye-bye.